Good evening. This is Stephen Otero speaking, and welcome to Mondo Eros Live on bbsradio.com. And tonight I have a very special guest. She is one, I would say, probably the most successful published authors in the field of sexuality today. And she is my guest tonight for the full hour, so we're going to have some very interesting conversations with Susan Crane Bakos. Welcome.
Hi, Stephen. Thank you for having me.
Oh, darling. I'm very happy to hear that you're here.
I'd like to mention first
some of the titles of your books, which are The Sex Bible for Women.
The Orgasm Bible.
The Orgasm Bible.
There is the original
Orgasm
Sex
Loop.
Bible.
Yes.
The Orgasm Loop. The new
what is the Orgasm Loop?
Sexy. It's a technique I created for having an orgasm every time. It's for women. And you can come anytime, every time, because women sometimes don't like to use their hands during intercourse. I created this great technique where they don't have to.
So this is a technique for women to have orgasms during intercourse.
During intercourse,
okay.
Yes. That is the number one question women ask of sex advisors.
Yes.
How can I come during intercourse? It's been the same question.
How can I have an orgasm with my partner?
Right. It's been the same question for 25 years since Helen Gurley Brown was doing Cosmo. Still the same question at Cosmo under Kate White, and it's pretty much, it's the question that most of us get. Dr. Ruth used to get that question all the time, too.
Yeah.
And the simple answer is, honey, diddle yourself. Put your little finger down there and tickle. But a lot of women don't want to hear that. They want to come on the strength of the penis alone.
Mm.
So if you look at the statistics, 25 to 33% of women, depending on which study and which reference works you read, 25 to 33% will come during intercourse alone. The rest won't. That's the majority. So that means the majority needs help, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
so
last week we had on Betty Dotson, and she always says, honey, you know, just get the vibrator. If the boyfriend doesn't like the vibrator, recycle the boyfriend, keep the vibrator.
I love Betty. And that's good advice. She's fantastic. She's got a great sense of humor about everything. And good advice. And when you combine a good sense of humor and good advice, it doesn't get any better than that.
But I think we should have many different options, and I think that it's great that you wrote this book, that you created this technique.
The thing about the orgasm loop, I created it for women especially so that they could come during intercourse without having to touch. But the great thing about it is it intensifies your orgasm. Mm. You can use it to make your orgasm stronger. You can use it during cunnilingus when you're receiving oral sex. You can use it when you're masturbating. It just makes everything more intense and stronger. So that can't be bad, right? That's a good thing all the way around.
No, not at all. It should be. I mean,
it's just pandering to men.
No, I think it's, I think the more
although occasionally
knowledge,
pandering to men is not bad.
Absolutely not.
But
I think the
not.
More knowledge that's out there, the more techniques, the more classes, right. The more workshops, you know, especially if I can book them.
Well, we need to book an orgasm loop workshop.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I need to make money.
It's a good thing for women to learn. It combines a few simple things. It starts with arousal. And arousal is very clear-cut for a man. He looks at his erection and he says, ha, I am aroused. Whereas a woman often denies arousal. The signs aren't as obvious to her. She might be lubricating. She might have an accelerated heart rate. But she's just kind of trained herself not to notice these things or, you know, I'm busy. I have things to do. I don't know where this relationship is going, blah, blah, blah. So she turns it all off or she doesn't pay attention to it. She doesn't realize it's happening. So the first thing is arousal image. You give yourself an image that you focus on. And when you focus on that image, you say, I am aroused, I feel my arousal, my body is aroused. So the first part of the orgasm loop is really, it is really the cognitive feedback loop. That's where it got its name, the orgasm loop. It is the idea that you think something and thus you feel it, and you have this going in a circle. So that's where the name comes from, partly.
Mm-hmm.
So then it moves on to incorporate fire breathing and PC flexing, fire breathing, the tantric technique, not really breathing fire, but the tantric technique, and PC flexing, and energy focus, which can be a little woo-woo, but I take the woo-woo out of everything, you know that.
Oh, yes, and you also have a book on Tantra, don't you? Also, that's also true.
The New Tantra, Simple and Sexy.
Right, and what
right,
the, and what is
the all
name of that book?
The woo-woo out.
That the New Tantra?
All that. Yes, the New Tantra. There's no soul gazing. There's no chakra clearing. There's no, there's just none of that. That wastes a lot of time.
Yes.
And the New Tantra is it's aimed at people who are the old Tantra or the Neo Tantra is what it really is. It's practiced in this country mainly by aging married couples, white couples in their 40s and 50s and even beyond, who've been together a long time, and they live in the suburbs, and they're married, and they're heterosexual, and they turn to Tantra to spice up their marriage, and that's fine. But there's a whole group of people out there who aren't married, who don't have regular partners, who maybe do have regular partners, but they're younger, and they're in a bigger hurry, and they don't turn to Tantra for the same reasons. They can get a lot of really hot sex tips out of this without having to deal with the woo-woo stuff.
Right.
Now, if you've got the time and you want to do the other stuff, that's fine. But if you don't have the time for it and you just want to learn how she can get aroused faster and have a stronger, better orgasm, and how he can sustain arousal longer and not come so fast, if these are the things you would like to learn, then the New Tantra is for you. If you want to learn to understand the one another's soul, then I'm, as you well know, I'm not the person to call, right?
No.
We have a lot of fun, you and I, Stephen, laughing
absolutely
about the movie.
Absolutely. We had a lot of fun that one night. I won't say her name on the air, but a relationship expert was talking about relationships and her boyfriend, and we were just sitting in the back together, and you were just taking one shot after the other, and I was trying very hard not to laugh out loud because we were also taping at the same time. We were videotaping.
And we were good. We were very quiet. We were way in the back of the room. We were very quiet. But yes, she was talking a lot about relationships. And in the United States, that's what sex is usually about.
Yes.
And it's taught in workshops, in books. I'm one of the few people who write about sex just as sex, not as the key part of the relationship. So
and your books
different.
Sell very well, but as I understand, your books sell exceptionally well in Europe.
Yes, outside of the U.S. I sell well in Europe and in Australia and in Japan and in places outside of the U.S., but especially Europe, because I have a more European sensibility about sex, which is, you know, you love it, you enjoy it. Sometimes it's part of a relationship and sometimes it's not. And you don't put all these. Women in the U.S. are taught to use sex, to get the guy, to keep the guy.
Yes.
You dispense sex carefully, and then you can keep the guy. I know so many young women who talk about hookups where they will have sex with a stranger. But then if they meet a guy that they think might be marriage material, they will wait to have sex for a little while because somehow they think that magic formula still applies. You know, and they're constantly telling each other. You and I also laugh at, we won't mention her name either, but a girl blogger who writes about relationships. And she's always giving this really stuffy little old lady advice about what women should and should not do in relationships and how long they should hold out and when they can dispense the sex. Well, that's a very American attitude. You know, French women
that
have
is.
Sex when they want to have sex. It's not about how are you going to control the guy? How are you going to get the guy? It's about, do I want the sex? Is this the sex I want? Do I want it with this guy? And if so, yes, I'm going to do it. And if not, no, it's not part of a game plan.
Well, it seems that with everything that has that we have gone through, everything that we have seen, this seems to be the thing that people are still stuck on. They haven't gotten past it.
I know. I hear it from young women in their 20s. I hear it from women in their 30s. I hear it from women in their early 40s who still aren't married, and they're getting pretty desperate by then. And they want to know what to do to quickly get the guy. And they've been dating the same way for years, which is going out with their checklist and going out with their agenda and interviewing the guy and, you know, trying to run the... I love the whole concept of speed dating. I say love because, I mean, I love making fun of it. Where you go somewhere and you talk to somebody for, what, 3 to 5 minutes?
Yeah.
To see if they match your checklist. How not erotic, how not sensual, how not interesting is that? It's so fake and so forced, and
yes.
People are doing this. And then they wonder why 10 years later they've done all these things and they've read all these books and they've tried all these techniques and, you know, 10 years later they still don't have a husband, but they have a long litany of sad failed relationship stories. Well, if you go out with that kind of agenda, you're almost guaranteed not to succeed. Even if you get the guy and you marry the guy, I'm betting you're not going to succeed down the line. It's going to make you unhappy somehow. Because there's nothing real about what they're doing.
No. Well, I remember there was a really great line in an episode of Sex and the City. You know, they're all on the ferry, I think, the Staten Island ferry. And when they were in the diner the next day, and Charlotte says, "I've been dating for 15 years. Where is he already?"
I remember that episode. Where is he? I'm tired. I'm going to stop dating.
I know
that so much. What I hear from a lot of women in their 30s now, and I have to say, most of my readers, I mean, I'm over 50, but most of my readers are younger. They're in their 20s and 30s and some in their 40s. Most of them are women, although a good percentage of my readers on the blog are men, and a growing percentage of my book readers are men in their 20s, 30s, and early 40s. And what I hear from the women in their 30s is that they're just disconnected from it all now. They spent their 20s having hookups and casual sex and then trying to date for mating, and they're trying to do these two things all run these two strategies at once, and they hit their 30s and they're just kind of tired and burnt out and discouraged and jaded and depressed, and so they say they withdraw and they even stop dating. Well,
yes.
I can see that because it's not been much fun, has it? It's
no.
not been about going out and meeting someone that you might like and not saying where is this going, but saying, you know, I like you, I've enjoyed the evening, let's have another evening. And enjoy that and see where that goes and not force it into something. Just see where it goes. American women just don't do that. They try to force things. They try to create this relationship thing. Like a friend of mine, he shall remain nameless, but you know who he is, Stephen. He met somebody recently. And he's been going through a fairly dry period. So he met someone recently. And they dated. She's from out of town, and it's turning into a long-distance relationship.
Uh-huh.
So she said to him after, I guess, 4 dates, she had to know where it was going. She was going to be going back to the other coast, wouldn't be back for a month, and she had to have an understanding with him about where this was going. I thought, 4 dates? she told him when he had to come out and see her, and that there would be goodbye presents exchanged, and she text messages him so often, it's ludicrous. I mean, you can't have lunch with him anymore because he's just continually having to respond to the text. And I say, don't you ever just turn it off?
I think I know who you're talking about, and I won't say his name either.
No, we won't say his name. But it's funny, isn't it? She is a
supposedly
high-powered career woman. And I don't understand how she's got the time to be constantly text messaging him. And frankly, we know him, Stephen. Is he that interesting? You need
no.
to keep track of him. 24/7, come on.
I mean, he's a nice guy and everything, but, you know,
He's a nice guy. Yeah.
He is, you know, and I like him. But I don't know why he puts up with it, but, you know, that's another story.
I think he's getting a lot of ego gratification out of it.
Yes.
You know, his career is not that amazing, and his life is not that amazing. So he's got this woman who's very successful who's flying him to the West Coast next week.
Well.
And, you know, I think there's some ego gratification in it, but I told him, I feel sorry for her. When she finds out that she's not going to be able to turn you into the beta man of her dreams.
Yeah.
It's going
to be
pretty
bad. That's
where
it's all going to go. That's where it's going to blow up.
Absolutely. Well, she shows the classic signs, and again, I hear this from so many other women. They talk about these men, but you know they don't know the men. They talk to them constantly or email them constantly, but what are they learning? Like, this particular woman hasn't read anything that our friend has written. Mm-hmm. Now, that would be a big red flag to me. If you're dating a writer and you don't read what the writer has written.
Right.
And the writer is blogging daily. Hey, there's a lot of clues in there. If you're interested, why are you not following that?
I think maybe because he is a man, and he's a male blogger, whereupon if the tables are turned, some of the women who blog, it's already known, hey, she's a blogger. Why are you dating her, dude?
Well, I think it's simply, he never learns anything about the women he's dating. He's come up a long way because now he knows what they actually do. I've shamed him so much. He would only know their first names and how pretty they were and how old they were and if they were still able to have children. But he wouldn't know what they did for a living.
I guess he'll go on. I don't want to say, no, I better not. I was going to make a remark about a famous mystery, but I won't. Yes.
It's not much. I mean, French women know how to retain a little mystery.
Yes.
But in America, it's like people spill their guts, but yet they don't learn anything about each other.
No.
They don't. I don't understand what they're doing. Like, she might tell him all kinds of stuff about herself, but she's probably leaving out the really important details, which he's not bothering to learn. And she's not bothering to learn his important details because, you know, she won't even read what he writes. So I think it's kind of a classic American dating story. It's all based on myth, his myth and her myth. And when these two people have reached a point where they're ready to get married for whatever reasons, then they do. So the two myths connect. And whether or not they can stay together depends a lot on whether or not they can sustain their mythology.
Yes.
If that breaks down somewhere down the line, they're all in trouble. I sound like a very negative person on marriage.
No, you're not at all. I don't consider you negative at all.
There are many good and happy marriages out there. It's just that I, as a sex journalist and as a research sexologist, I just deal with the sex. I don't deal with giving people relationship advice or judging relationships. Although I like to poke fun, but I think it's
worthwhile because, you know, these people, you know, they're not learning anything. That's why I just look at it so much as a joke, basically.
Women talk endlessly about relationships
in
this country. But yeah, I don't know that they actually relate. It seems like they fill up the time talking about relating and how to manage, how to get a relationship and how to manage it and how to control it. But I don't know that they spend really a lot of time relating because it seems to me relating is what you do with people, whether you're having sex with them or working with them or having to negotiate space on the subway with them. What you're doing is relating to people all the time, right?
Well,
why do we have to have these fancy words?
The real relationship is with the girls.
Right.
That's what the real relating was. The real relating was between the four girls. That's what the real relationship was. The guys
were just there to provide fucking. Well, to me, we knew that Sex and the City was totally fantasy when she didn't marry Aiden and she did end up with Big because she was not the kind of girl he ever would have married. The one he did marry, the sweet little girl he met in Paris, the proper society girl. That's who he would have married. And she would have married someone like Aiden in real life. So we knew that was a whole, you know, whole romantic thing.
Right. It was simply something that was created.
Right. She was not the kind of gal that, because of what she did for a living, believe me, I know, considering what I do for a living, I'm not the kind of woman that a certain kind of man would ever marry. Date,
no.
Sleep with, you know, take to Paris, whatever, but not marry.
Well, the
because
interesting
still
thing
in
is
this country a stigma about women being sexually outspoken and sexually open and provocative.
Yes. Well, the thing about this, about Sex and the City, if you really want the truth, you have to go back to the original source material. If you go back to the original book that Candace Bushnell wrote, she wrote...
And it was a wonderful book.
It was. It's. I think it's far superior. But she wrote an ending to the big Carrie relationship. In her ending, they didn't get together.
Right.
And they
because
told
she
her
understood that world. She understood it. And the TV series and the film just kind of pandered to romantic expectations of the man.
Right.
But yeah, she understood it. She knew that this was not someone he would have married ever.
No. And the real big went off and married some young girl, and they went off to, I think, Maine somewhere.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then I think came back. I've lost track of that story. But yeah, the real big went off and married the appropriate woman.
Yeah.
They always marry the appropriate woman.
And then she went off and married a young ballet dancer.
Yes. Yes, she did. That's right.
So
when are you going to get married, Stephen?
What's that?
When are you going to get married, Stephen?
Oh, I don't think so. I think I'm just going to continue to enjoy my research.
That's a plan. Nobody does better research than you do. And you are like the research king.
People are out there listening. I am the chief researcher. You know, there's no one better than me. Well, no, I can't say that. But
it's true. There isn't anyone better than
true.
Me. You can find
there
anything.
Is.
I
That's
always
right.
tell people, you ask Stephen a question, and guaranteed, within a few hours, in your inbox, there it is. There's the answer. He's found it for you. And he can
know,
tell you,
when,
you know, all the references to it.
Yeah. When Anton's friend Scott comes over, he always asks me these obscure movie questions, and he hasn't been able to stump me yet, so.
No one can. You can find anything.
Pretty much
and it's
so.
Increasingly hard to research on the Internet, I find, because there's just too much material out there, and Google
yes.
is just, ugh. Yeah. Working on Google
is all ads.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. That's true.
So you have to be able to go through all that. You know, I think the problem with most people is they don't have the time, they don't have the patience, and I have.
They're turned
on
right
now.
You know, when you Google Susan Crane Bakos with the quotes mm-hmm. around the name, the first thing you get is an irate African American woman blogger.
Yeah.
Who I've been told, I've never read what she wrote about me, but I've been told that she knows, understands search engine manipulation, which of course I don't. Search engine optimization, so that she plays with it every day to make sure it's the first thing that comes up when you hit my name, because I wrote an article about how much I liked black men that offended her. So there's so much on the Internet that is just, if you learn a little bit about it and you understand how people can play around with these search engines and trick them and manipulate them, then it makes it even more difficult. You can't find anything you want because you have so many people playing around with it to get what they want at the top of the list. So
and you just have to be very discerning, that's all. You have to, like, really just...
You do. You have to really target your questions, and you have to be very discerning. So what is the most, I'm going to interview you here for a minute, what is the most arcane, unusual, and really fascinating sex fact that you've tracked down?
Oh, boy. I had to think about that for a second.
Gotta think about that one. There's so much interesting stuff out there. About over a decade ago, I guess about 10, 12 years ago, I wrote a book called Kink, The Hidden Sex Lives of Americans. And at the time, kink was just beginning to mainstream. And the internet wasn't as big a factor in our lives. This was like the late 90s. Wasn't as big a factor in our lives as it is now. Now, people just, they find everything they want, every connection they want to make, kinky or otherwise, on the internet. But then it was a little, you know, it was a little less prevalent, and it was just beginning to break out. So I traveled all over the country, and some of the things I discovered, you know, some things you expect, like foot fetishes and bondage and, you know, SM clubs, paddles, whatever, spanking, whatever, yada, yada. Been there, done that, right? I've seen that. I've written about that. I used to write for Penthouse Forum, so I'm pretty much, I haven't done it all, but I've pretty much seen it all. I've experienced it all. But even I found some surprises when I was traveling. I traveled all over the country researching kinky behavior. What do you think is the weirdest thing I saw?
Jim, that guy, Jim?
No, that guy Jim? No, no. Strange to Jim? No.
Yeah.
No. No, it was in Washington, D.C. It was a private play party of a group of people. They're SM players. And they were powerful government people. And some of them were very strange. So every month, one person got to act out their fantasy or have their fantasy acted out for them in a separate room from where all the other play was going on. And the strangest thing I saw was a man whose fantasy was, and I can't understand it, to be shot by paintball guns. So he was naked in this room, and there was plastic on the floor. There was a war movie playing in the background, and pretty women shot at him with paintball guns. So when he finally collapsed on the floor in a sweaty, painty, messy heap, a dom came in dressed as a cocktail waitress, carrying a platter that had raw hamburger on it. She walked all over his body in her heels, and then she rubbed hamburger into him. That was the strangest thing I've ever seen. And I kept asking people, the people who had watched it, I kept saying, what's this got to do with sex? Could somebody please, I mean, the man had an erection the whole time. So to him, it obviously had something to do with sex. But I could never really make the connection. It was just too difficult for me to make that connection. But that was the strangest thing I ever saw.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think probably
right out there in America.
Yeah. Probably the connection between the military, the job, and the desire to role play, the desire to have something like that. I think people who do that probably are bored with the normal thing, and they have this, they want to act something out. And so that's what they go to.
Yeah, it was unusual. It was different.
It was.
So have you encountered anything like that? Anything that unusual?
I've been a couple of times to Paddles, which is an S&M club.
Right.
And I've seen some scenes going on there. I remember one night we went to this orgy, group sex party, downtown at this really great loft, and Anton was invited there to do the expanded orgasm massage. And of course I went along because I was his assistant, and I was just strictly there to be his assistant. I wasn't to participate, which that was fine with me. I was just there to watch. And Speliotis, the photographer, was also there that night. And he tied
his belt. He's an amazing photographer too. Have you interviewed him?
Yes, I have. He's like my second guest. And he ties this girl up, and then Anton comes over. He just passes his hand over her, never touches her, and the girl orgasmed.
Now that is when you know you have power, right?
Yes.
See, we can all do that with the orgasm loop.
Yes.
Every
and I've seen people do that. I've seen people do that.
Any woman can do that. You can orgasm anytime you want without anybody touching you. And
well,
there are some women who can naturally do that.
Yes.
I've interviewed a lot of women. I did a lot of work on easily orgasmic women and interviewed women who could come from, like, having their ears nibbled and their neck blown on and their nipples sucked and things, and, you know, things that are extra genital that you don't think would lead to orgasm. I have found, though, it's more likely to happen to a woman after she's already had a clitoral or a vaginal or both orgasm. So,
well,
we both know who
I will say, I'll just use her name as Jazz, who is our Anton's model, who's Anton's squirting goddess, and he never touches her. He never touches her genitals, and she's already squirting.
She's amazing, too. I love watching
her. She's amazing.
I love what Anton does with the orgasmic providing is just beautiful to watch. I've written this, and I've said it to many people. He elevates it to a level that is not at all. There's like nothing smarmy or nothing voyeuristic. Or it really raises it to a level where everybody watching it feels is elevated. You can see that when you're in the room. He takes the sexuality. I've interviewed many people about sacred sexuality, and I tend to take most of that stuff with a grain of salt and make fun of it quite often because quite often it's pretentious people babbling. And they have nothing to impart to us that is unique or different that is really sacred. But when you're in Anton's presence and he is doing this, it feels sacred. It is, feels like this is the lifting up of sexuality. This is really something you're not ever going to see anywhere else. It's a rare and amazing thing.
It is. I've seen other people who have done it, and it just, there's no comparison. In fact, I remember one night at Paddles, there was another group of people who came in who I shall not give their names. But they're fairly well known, and they do the same thing.
You especially. I know some of the sex industry people, but I pretty much have stayed out of it. But you know everybody. I mean, you could really tell tales.
If I really wanted to, I could. But I'm going to be on my good behavior tonight. So, but let's just say that there's another group that teaches expanded orgasm, but they call it something else, and they did their demo that night there. And it was like, at one point I just had to get up, I picked up my chair, went to the corner, and I just had to close my eyes. I just couldn't take it anymore. I was just shutting down. But also what I didn't like about it was the person who was doing the, I don't mind a little rah, 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 getting people, turned up. That's okay. But it's when they start talking in that slow voice, and I want you to tune in to the feelings of what's going on. Okay, but don't do hypnotism with me, okay? I know what you're doing. So, hey. But, Anton doesn't do anything.
I can't imagine anyone ever coming up to Anton's standard. He's just so amazing when he does it. It's worth seeing, even if you never plan to, learn how to do the technique or participate or whatever. It's certainly worth seeing because it's an elevating sexual experience for anybody in the room. And as you know, I'm fairly jaded. I have seen pretty much everything. I have witnessed a lot as a sex journalist. I don't participate, but I witness. I have a kind of a rule about it. If I'm learning and observing and writing about something, I won't participate. I do sometimes write about my personal sex life, but it's clear that I'm writing about my personal sex life.
Yeah.
I think I need to have a divide between the two. If I'm researching something and I'm studying something, I'm not going to jump into that.
Well, what
apparently,
do you think about,
wrote a brilliant book, did it, but...
What do you think? I know that you do take. I know you take. You do take shots at it, and I completely am in agreement with you. I mean, 99% of the things that I've seen out there that are labeled tantra are pretty laughable.
They are, aren't they?
They are, unless you go to someone who's, you know, who is for real, who has really done the work, who has really studied.
Right.
And the only people who I know are Mark Michaels and Patricia Johnson, who were going to be my guest last week, but unfortunately I fell ill that day and I couldn't go ahead with the interview. But they are authentic. I mean, they've studied authentic Tantra.
I've heard that.
Tantra.
I have not seen them, but I'm going to make it a point to go to one of their workshops. I've heard they're authentic. And I'll tell you who else I really admire is Barbara Corrales.
Yes.
She was the urban tantra. She was my inspiration for writing the new tantra because she did a book, Tantra for People Who Don't Fit Into the white people, straight people, married people's tantra. She said, this is tantra for people who are gay and who are into BDSM, and this is tantra for them. And when I read her book, I thought, I'm not this, this is not who I am, but I love what she's done here. She has really opened this up. She's taken this stodgy old tantra, and she's opened it up, and she's made it very, very sexy. You know, she's really, I thought she did a great job, and that made me think, okay, I can do what I think is really a sex technician, because technique is what I primarily do. I can look at it as a sex technician, and I can take the technique from tantra that I think really works, and I can hand it to single people, to young people. In fact, I'm going to teach a workshop, Tantra for One, which I don't think anybody's done. So that will be something new and different. Because
what's it going to be called?
Tantra for One.
Oh, great. Yes.
You can use it in masturbation. You can use it with a partner who's not into it. Say you don't have a regular sex partner, or you have a casual, you know, friends with benefits relationship, and you don't have a partner who's going to take tantra classes with you and gaze into your eyes, you can still use these techniques to improve your sex. And can you see me with a partner who wants to gaze into my eyes? I would kill him. Like, never mind my eyes, honey. Let me see that cock.
Yes. What are you going to get gazing in my eyes for? That's what a teacher should be gazing at. I would.
Yeah.
That would be funny to see you do something like that.
Well, when I teach my tantra workshops, it's going to be like, never mind all this eye gazing. If you want to look into each other's eyes, you can. But
no, you know what you should do? When you teach your workshop, you should do something like that. Start out with a little scene where you're trying to do the original tantra, the traditional tantra. And then just break out of it. What are you doing? This is, you know, and it just, you know, and that'll just like crack everybody up. Like,
who the hell has good time for this?
I know.
That's the thing that kills me. It's like, who has time to sit around chanting and deep soul gazing and yada yada yada? And I am so sick of that term, soulmate. Blah.
Yes.
You know, everybody's looking for their soulmate or found their soulmate or splitting up because it wasn't their soulmate. What nonsense. That is a term that annoys the hell out of me.
The thing about Tantra and other forms of what we call sacred sexuality isn't really what it's all about, is the fact that this is giving white Americans, we'll say white Americans, but I'm sure there's other people as well. It's giving white Christian Americans the opportunity to have sex without feeling guilty about it.
Yes, I think it is, Stephen. I think you really hit it. That is exactly what it's doing. It's helping these couples feel good about being sexual. In the early days of their relationship, they were young and horny, so they did it anyway. But then as they get a little older and their relationship ages, they step back and they become... You notice how many people turn to church after 40 and even more after 50. Well, because some of these people who don't turn to church turn to spiritual sexuality because they feel uncomfortable about sex and they need an excuse or they need a reason. You really hit the nail on the head. You hit it exactly right. I love talking to you because you always, you get right down to it.
Yes, boom. Well, and you're the perfect person, the perfect foil, you know, because, you know, you'll come... And go there too. I think exactly that's what it is. I think it's just that we are so, you know, we are on the adult channel here. we're on the adult channel, so I can say whatever I want to say. It's my show anyway. We're so fucked by everything that we grew up with, all this bullshit
that was given to us.
It's a wonder how anybody can perform at all. You know,
That's when I started blogging. You know, it's been about a year now since I've been doing Sexy Prime. Can I mention the blog address?
Absolutely.
It's sexyprime.typepad.com. And my whole point is really to empower women sexually, really to encourage them to explore their sexuality, and no matter what age they are, or whether they like men, or they're bi, or they like girls, whatever, you know, across the races, let's have a dialogue about what empowers female sexuality.
Yes.
And it's really a lot of fun because I do sex tips, and I do some book reviews of sexy books, and do interviews with people. And now we have our first Sexy Prime Boy Toy of the Month, and he is very hot. Oh, my, that boy is hot.
Yes.
And the good thing about it is since I put that up on Sunday, oh, my God, I'm getting all kinds of photos of men who want to be Sexy Prime's Boy Toy number two. That's kind
of fun. You know what I liked about that particular post was, in fact, I'm looking at it right now.
He's so beautiful, isn't he? And in keeping with the theme of my blog, I do not show full faces of people who are writing intimately about their lives, unless they're pushing a book and they want their full faces out there. But otherwise, other people, like on Wednesdays, we have Kimmy. She writes erotica, and her face is a beautiful photograph of her in a green bra, and the hair over her face, you really can't identify her.
Yes.
You don't have any other name except Kimmy. And then on Midnight Saturday Nights, I have Robin Alexanders, who uses her name because she is an erotica writer, but not her face. So you just see her back in a little sheer negligee kind of thing. It's very sexy. Whenever I have guest bloggers who are writing about the very intimate details of their lives, we don't show faces. And I didn't show the face of the boy toy. But, oh, that bare chest.
Yes.
Isn't that gorgeous?
It is. But I like what he said about, I know more about what to look for in a woman, and I'm more comfortable in being open and direct.
Yeah. Now, he's in his late 20s. I think, though, that he is a very articulate and intelligent young man, but he also, his emotional intelligence and his sexual intelligence is kind of beyond his years.
Mm-hmm.
And he credits that to being in relationships with, like, women who he says he learned a lot from.
Yeah.
He had some older women lovers, and he was in a long-term relationship. And he says he learned a lot from women. And that's kind of good to hear a man say, I learned from women, and I think I understand, and I'm a better lover. He's very articulate.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I was really impressed with him.
Absolutely.
I told him, you're my first boy toy of the month, not just because of that gorgeous bare chest, but because you really are a smart, witty, interesting guy.
Yes.
And you have some things to say to us that I think will be fun. So he was number one. Looking for number two.
Yes.
You want to send me a naked photo, Stephen?
I don't think my body matches his.
Whose does? I mean, come on, he's in his 20s.
That's true. Yeah, maybe if I'm shot, let's say, from above the belly. just from above the belly to up to the neckline.
No.
If I go into your blog, I want that shot of me against my face against the chain link fence.
Oh, I love that photograph. That's
which
really
I have to give. I'm going to give credit now to Stephen Speliotis, so that he can hear me say his name and say yes, it was a great. He is the photographer who created that shot.
And he's a wonderful photographer.
He's a wonderful photographer.
There are so many, many talented people that I've met in the sex industry people who are doing interesting things and people with a lot of talent. One thing I try to do on the blog is support and encourage other people, especially younger women.
Yes.
Like Tristan Tornino, who does the anal sex books and workshops, and Rachel Kramer Bussell, who does edits the erotic anthologies. There's just a lot of fabulous young women out there that I want to try to support. Audacia Ray.
Yes.
There's an amazing person. Really, really much more politically active than most of us, and I think that's a great thing.
You look at her,
her Facebook, and Jamie Waxman, fabulous young woman. I've known Jamie for years. She's really very talented. Expert.
Well, you were a guest several times on Naked New York.
Yes, yes, and Jamie was doing that. Actually, she was with Bob Berkowitz at Real Personal, too, wasn't she? I think you recall.
No, I think that was before her time.
I guess you're right,
Which is actually, that's the first time I saw you on the air. I had been aware of your writing, but that was the first time I actually saw you, was when you were on Real Personal.
Real Personal.
And you
Real
were talking
Personal
about women who have
good,
a high
good
sex
show.
Drive. It was.
Yeah, I've always had a high sex drive.
And
people
you
ask me, why do you write about sex? Well, you know, I thought about it a lot, so I guess that influenced me, right?
It was a really great show, and I still remember it because of another person on that panel who has since gone missing in action.
Yes, the Christine that we lost.
Yes,
beautiful young woman, interesting young woman, dropped out of sight. But we think, I've heard that she married somebody and is living in Europe. The thing about women is they can always take the husband's name, and then we lose them entirely.
Yes.
You know, if she doesn't write under a certain name, and she really wasn't a writer. She wasn't a published writer. So we just lose people. But, yeah, she was a lovely young woman. A lot of fun. Very interesting. Bob did some good shows. I would love to see that kind of show come back.
We're doing something to bring that back.
Yes.
No, that's what I'm hoping I'm doing with here, but ultimately I think that would be a great thing to have a show like that or a series of tapes with, the leading sex experts and just going into really in-depth.
Giving their best advice.
Yes.
I
that you can't do
idea.
On regular television.
No, you can't. You cannot do that on regular television. Like, my best advice would be learn how to worship the cock. Learn how to get a really, really great blowjob. And come when you're getting a blowjob, which you can do with your orgasm loop if it doesn't naturally happen. So I would definitely give that advice. And you're right, you can't do that on television.
Well, didn't I give you the best line of all?
Which line is that?
The one about, she didn't make love to me, she made love to my cock.
Oh, yes, I love that line. Where did that come from?
That's from a Gerard Damiano film called Never So Deep. I think it was 1981, I believe, was one of the last of the really lavish big budget porn
films. Every man wants a woman who will make love to his cock.
Yes.
I really do believe that's true. It also helps get some of the other stuff out of the way. I'm not saying that that's what you should do all the time, but you certainly need to know how to do that. It gets you out of that whole relationship pattern where you're thinking about what he said yesterday that you didn't like and what he's going to do tomorrow that you might not like, and it's just all about the cock.
Yes.
You love the cock, you pleasure the cock, you own the cock while you're pleasuring it, and that gives you such an incredible sense of erotic power. Nothing gives a woman erotic power like performing a blowjob so exquisitely well that he's just left limp. One of my best sex experiences was, you know, the guy that dignitized me for about a year and a half.
Yes.
I've written about him a lot. He was definitely a man not worthy of his cock, but he had an amazing cock. And one of my all-time best sex experiences was going over to his apartment one night, and we made out a little bit on the couch, and we drank some champagne, and I knelt down in front of him, and I gave him, like, an incredible blowjob that went on quite a while, and he came a couple of times. And then I left. I never even took my clothes off. I think I unbuttoned. My shirt was unbuttoned. I pulled up my skirt. I was wearing black thigh highs and high heels, and I didn't even undress. And when I was finished with him, I got up, and I kissed him goodbye, and I left. And he just sat there with this dazed look on his face. And I went home and masturbated. And it was one of the better sex experiences of my whole life.
Yeah.
Saying that's what you want to do all the time, but it certainly was really, it was intense. I felt like a sexual superwoman, but I had this amazing cock in my power, and then I got it to do all these things, and that I found a couple of places on it I don't think other women had found, not in the way I found them. So that is an exciting thing to do. So that would be my key advice to women, would be, if you're a heterosexual woman, is to have a love affair with a cock. Because it changes entirely how you see men, and it takes some of the pressure off the whole thing. And the other advice I would give them is, for God's sake, go out and buy a lot of dildos. Have a lot of vibes. Have your whole wardrobe of sex toys so that you please yourself every day. You have an orgasm every day. And you're not dependent on the man or the relationship for the orgasm. Because then when you have sex with him, it's better. You don't bring all this pressure to it. You come to it more with a sense of play.
I think that's some of the best advice I've heard, and I'd like to see you write about that and more extensively, maybe even a whole book for that. The sense of play, isn't that what's really missing?
That is what's missing. That is what's missing, and we weigh sex down so much in this country with all the relationship stuff and all the morality. This sex is good sex and this sex is bad sex. And we have the moral majority people telling us that gay people shouldn't have sex and maybe you shouldn't play around with whips and chains or whatever you want to do. They're trying to tell you what you can do. Now, I look at it this way. I say, it may not be my cup of tea, but if it is good for you, if it empowers you and it involves adults only, we're not talking about minors and we're not talking about abuse, but it's adults only decide how they want to play, then why not let them play? Why do I get to say how they play?
Yeah.
Do I get to say what they eat for dinner and what clothes they put on every day? No. As long as they don't go naked on the street, there's laws about that. You know, we don't get to tell people what to do, but yet we have this whole moral Christian element that wants to tell us what to do in bed, and I think that's incredibly wrong. I hate that, and it's taken a lot of the sense of play out of sex. There's not much sense of play in this country, and there's not enough flirting. We've lost the art of flirting. This is one thing I love about Harlem.
Yeah.
Men in Harlem still flirt.
Yes.
It's the one part of New York City where everybody is just a little more comfortable with flirting. I think black men didn't get the same message that white men got about political correctness, because it was a message really delivered more to white men than it was to black men.
Yes.
So I think white men have really labored under the burden of political correctness in many, many ways, and it's taken a lot of the fun out of who they are.
That's exactly what happened the other night during the interview with the Tantric Warriors. Shanti said, you know, men, please go back to being men, you know, and you know, basically.
Yeah, don't try to find your feminine side anymore, okay?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, so that's another thing. That's one of your, one of your taboos that...
I hate that whole find your feminine side. That's another thing that we sort of did to men in the 70s. And again, it's white men, because black men were not really being given that message so much.
Yes.
Black people at that point in time had a different struggle going on when civil rights we associate with the 60s. Well, it was an ongoing struggle throughout the 70s. And men, white men, really got the whole message about finding their inner feminine. I'm not really interested in a man finding his inner feminine.
Yes.
I really don't want to hear about his feelings all that much, and I don't want to see him cry.
I think
if you're feeling me to cry, baby.
Yeah. I think the people who need to find the men who need to find their inner feminine are not the men who are doing it.
Exactly. You're right about that. They're not
some of the guys who are, you know, who are ball busters, ball breakers in the suits. Those are the guys who need to find their inner feminine. Those are the guys who need to cry a little bit. But the guy on the street, I don't think he really needs that.
No, I think you're right. The men who were doing it were not really the ones who even needed that kind of conditioning or training. But it just turned them into wimps. And we really don't want wimps. Women don't want wimps.
No.
I
remember,
I don't know a woman who does.
I remember one memorable night watching you in the audience about seeing this man on one of these seminars, and he was going on about his inner feminine. You wanted to strangle him, basically.
I did. I remember that night. It was some kind of a New Age panel thing.
Yes.
And I was only there to hear Nan Weiss, who is a neuroscience researcher and a very interesting speaker. And I was there to hear her, and the rest of the panel was pretty lame. But the worst was the man talking about finding his inner feminine. I don't know how. I think he spoke before Nan, or I would have left.
Yeah.
The only reason I sat through him at all was that there was no other way to do it. I don't like those panels. There's always somebody really good, and then there's somebody okay, and then there are some people that are just awful.
That's the kind of the risk
room.
You run. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a panel that I would put together that I would program. Let's put it that way.
No.
But I see how other people put these things together, and I think you're like, what are you thinking? Why you got him up there for?
I know. I don't understand that either. Do you suppose it's because there aren't enough interesting people in the world?
I think it's probably that. I think it's probably and probably maybe the person is paying a fee to be at the expo.
Oh, good point. You know, never thought about that.
You know, a lot of these people have tables at those expos that they pay.
Yeah,
you know,
selling just horrible, stupid stuff.
Yeah. And I think that's how they get
healing crystals and things like that.
Yeah. You know, or finding your inner feminine or. I remember what well you said. You said something.
Oh,
like, does this guy ever get laid?
Does he get laid? And if so, who are these women? Why?
Yeah. You know, it's like, but it's, you know, it's just, you know, there's a certain amount of jadedness, and there's a certain amount of just looking at. No, I don't want to use the word jaded. I want to use the word like disbelief. Like, what is wrong with everybody? You know, am I so crazy? Am I so crazy? No, I don't think I'm crazy. I think you people are crazy.
I think I'm a little bit jaded, but when I see something that's really good, I respond to it.
Yes.
As I did to Anton. When I see something that really is elevated above the rest of the dreck out there.
I don't want to use the word jaded. I think that you are someone who is extremely experienced, who knows what they want, who is very self-aware, and just has a very low tolerance for bullshit.
I do have a low tolerance for bullshit. You're right about
that. You know,
that.
And this stuff is, and let's be frank, this stuff, most of it, is bullshit.
It is. Know, most of what passes for sex enlightenment workshops and seminars and books is just so much crap. I was asked to evaluate a manuscript by a publisher recently to see if I could book doctor it to make it work. And I would have liked to have been able to tell them that I could do that and collected the fee for it, but I read it and I said, this is just pure dreck from beginning to end. It's page after page that says nothing. And if I had to eliminate everything that says nothing, you'd be down to a pamphlet. When you have a book, I don't know what to tell you to do with this. But I would cancel the book, and they did end up canceling the book, because the author really had written nothing but just nonsense. You know what I mean. You go to any New Age event, any New Age bookstore, and you open those self-published books, and they're just full of nonsense.
Yes.
And that is what passes for the sexuality, spiritual sexuality world. Other than Anton, I don't think he's the class act in that world.
Yes.
He's really a class act.
Yes.
It's like if you had, who was that great old dancer? Fred Astaire.
Yeah.
And you put him with some kids who were taking dance lessons, you know. he's so much the class act, and most of that stuff is just wreck. Which, is why I wrote the New Tantra. I said, let's, you know, get rid of some of this nonsense, and let's talk about what really works in Tantra, the techniques that work. And there are plenty of good techniques that work.
Absolutely.
There are also, as far as I'm concerned, there are 6 basic positions, and I think there are a dozen. There's like 2 variations on each position. There's a dozen ways to do it, and if you do it, that's all you need to know. You do not need to study a book with 50 or 70 or 100 positions with slight variations of the one before, are so contorted that the penis and the clitoris will never even be within striking range. I took it down to just 12, the 6 basics with 1 variation on each. Because the whole point of intercourse is to have some kind of friction, right?
Yes.
Not just to say you're assuming a different position. So I'm very critical of a lot of the Tantra books for that reason, too.
Yes.
I looked at one in particular.
So.
Yeah, I looked at one and I realized they had done the same stock photos for 4 or 5 positions, and they called it a different position, though it was the same stock photo. And another thing I have to say in bragging about my books, which is really praising the publisher Quiver, they don't do stock photos. They do photo shoots with models. And I go along and I pose the models, and so all of the photos you see are directly related to the text. And
all photos in your books are original photos.
Yes, original photos.
And I would say beautiful original photos.
Oh, they're gorgeous.
The books are
so proud of those books.
The books are valuable not just for the instruction and for your writing, but also the photos.
Oh, absolutely. They're erotic and they're tasteful. They're elegant.
Yes.
They never go over the edge. You never ever feel like you're looking at a porn book. They are more artistic.
Yes.
Which is beautiful photos. I'm really proud of that. And I'm proud of the blog, which my publisher has also set up. It has a beautiful design. I particularly love
sexyprime.com.
Sexyprime.typepad.com.
Yes.
I particularly love the banner photo with you see a naked torso of a gorgeous woman holding a bouquet of vibes, which is with my own personal riff on the wedding bouquet.
Well,
honey, that's the bouquet you're going to need.
Well, I think that our time is almost up, but I just wanted to thank you for being here tonight.
It was absolutely fun.
I think we have probably another show that we could do. We could probably do several more ones.
I think we could do several.
I just wanted to, you are an inspiration to me because you are someone who lives life on their own terms and you never look back.
For better or worse, I have done that. Sometimes for worse, baby, but I have done that. You have too. We have that in common. I think that's why we're friends.
Yes.
Well,
so
this was fun. You do a good show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you
so
Susan.
Much.
Thank you.
Good night.
Night. And thank you for listening once again to Mondo Eros here on bbsradio.com. We will return next week at the same time for some more stimulating conversation. My name is Stephen Otero. Thank you for listening, and good evening.